You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the NL West. I'm Allison Twitter from MLB.com, and as we look at the National League West Division, the Padres are still trying to figure out who they are and what they're going to do this season under interim manager Pat Murphy. And you look at the Dodgers, who have a true all-star in Jock Peterson, who is having a sensational rookie season. In Colorado, LaTroy Hawkins is on his farewell tour and is filling in as closer while John Axford takes care of a few things. And in Arizona, Archie Bradley is looking at a second opinion on a shoulder that he's not quite sure what's wrong with him. So he's going to be meeting with Dr. Andrews and to see what is going on there. And in San Francisco, Matt Duffy, who would have thought, making a case for maybe team MVP with his performance lately. So it's filled in nice at third base and seems to have solidified that position, and that should be his position for many months to come. Here with Ken Gernick, who covers the Dodgers for MLB.com. And Ken, you know, I'm looking at Jock Peterson, who is one of my picks to make the All-Star team. I realize that he's not up there in voting. But, you know, just thinking about this is sort of the year of, like, the young star. I mean, there's so many young players that are emerging into the game that are, like, under 23 years old, and they do a few things for teams. First of all, they obviously add, energy and talent and all of that to a team. They also help sort of maintain payroll because they're not big money yet. But, I mean, what has Jock Peterson meant to this team? How significant would it be for the Dodgers for him to represent them at the All-Star game?
I think the thing about Peterson, and most people really don't take much note of it, is his defense. You know, everybody falls for the home run, so they see the home runs on all the highlights. But this guy has played a center field better than really anybody's played center field in a Dodger uniform in quite a while. He's aggressive. He gets great routes, real good on the first step, runs down balls, has a solid arm. He's just really solidified the outfield defensively, taking charge. And like I said, it doesn't get as much notice as the home runs, but it's been at least as important, if not more so, for the Dodgers. So as far as an all-star defensively, he's as good defensively as any player they have out there. So he's deserving, to that extent, even when you don't go over the numbers. Now, offensively, his numbers are unusual. He's not hitting 240. You know, and most people, you would think, well, that's not an all-star. But he's got 20 home runs, and he's a rookie. So, and his on-base percentage is through the roof because he takes walks, even though he strikes out a lot. He's probably going to strike out four times this year. So he's got very unusual numbers. But when he puts the full package together, considering he's a rookie, adding leadoff and playing outstanding defense, he is as deserving, probably, as anybody on the team for all-star consideration.
Yeah, we should note that he has the third most rookie home runs before July 1st in history, behind Albert Pujols, who had 21 in 2001, and, of course, the famous Wally Burger, from who had 22 in 1930. Of course, I've never heard of him. But so that's very significant. And another person, Yasmani Grandal. So he was sort of the centerpiece in the Matt Kemp deal, and he's been a really right spot for this team. I mean, he has he's really fulfilled everything that they expected of him when he came over. Is that accurate?
Since May, yes, because in April he struggled, and they thought that he was resting a little bit, and which is understandable coming over in that trade and knowing that you're being asked to replace Matt Kemp, who's a local favorite. He had a talk with Don Mattingly in early May. And Mattingly told him, kind of simple things, just go out and play, quit trying to feel like you have to be the next man. And he's been a different player since then. He's a switch hitter, although really all of his production is coming batting left-handed, right-handed. He's a much different player, and that's why against left-handed pitching, they still use A.J. Ellis quite a bit, and Ellis catches Kershaw for the most part. But overall, the Dodgers can't complain about a trade that really was panned, in most quarters when it happened, because it was so proven and Grandal being younger and having had a knee injury, and the jury was out on him. But he's been probably more than what a lot of people expected offensively, for sure. And, you know, he could be hitting 25 or 30 home runs this year. So, you know, it might not be Buster Posey territory, but the Dodgers aren't complaining. They feel that that he's done everything they've wanted and more.
A lot of times when we talk, I focus on Clayton Kershaw because everything's interesting when it comes to Clayton Kershaw, given his talent level and some of the ups and downs that he's gone through this season. But I didn't realize this about Zach Greinke. So he just won for the first time since May 5th. And, of course, for those of us who still think that wins might be somewhat significant to a pitcher, you know, that's pretty significant. It was a 9-start winless streak. And that he had thrown 20 2/3 scoreless innings over his last 3 starts. So during that, you know, Zach Greinke is so fascinating, and he's got to be a lot of fun to cover because he doesn't give cliches, and he certainly just says whatever he's thinking. And there's not a whole lot of filter there. So during that period, did he express any kind of frustration, or did he just sort of understand that that's the way that a season goes sometimes?
Yeah, no, he's been the perfect teammate. You know, he's never criticized his teammate. He's always praised their defense behind him. Says things always balance out. He said that he's gotten some wins that he probably didn't deserve because they did score runs back in April and May when they were averaging 6 or 7 runs a game. So he's been playing one bit. You're right. He's kind of refreshing and he's honest. But I believe that this is what he believes. He's just going out doing what he can do, and at the end of the year, it'll all you know, all come out in the wash, you know, and things will balance out. So he's been, like I said, a great teammate, and he's got the Kershaw-like ERA. So you know, on the pitching front, even though Kershaw is the defending MVP, if you had to say who is deserving for the All-Star team off the first half of this season, it would definitely be Greinke on the pitching staff.
Yeah, for sure. And I just we've gone over ad nauseum the fact that, yes, the Dodgers need some help in the starting rotation. Probably will make a deal. There's a lot of teams out there that are in the same kind of situation. But I just wanted to, first of all, this lead of one of your game stories was so great. Monday night's game started with Mike Bolsinger sick to his stomach, and by the end of the night, he had company. And, of course, referring to the fact that he had a stomach bug or food poisoning of some kind. And you also said that he literally gutted through 4 innings, so I found that quite humorous. But, you know, obviously that was like a bad game because he couldn't give his all, and then the bullpen sort of got burned out through that game. Do they feel like they've gotten as much out of him, though? I read an article where they might have, like, kind of hit the end. They feel like they might have gotten everything they're going to get from these guys that have sort of been picking up the slack in the back end of their rotation. Or was that sort of a, you know, just one of those crazy things where he was sick and he might have some things left in the tank?
Well, you know, that's, they're both unproven, Bolsinger and Frias. And Frias now has some lower back stiffness, and Bolsinger had the food poisoning. But between them, they haven't pitched beyond the 6th inning for a month. So there is some concern that they might have gotten, you know, what was there to get. And even if not, I think that the management seems and they're pretty open about it. They don't want to go through the second half with 2 unproven pitchers in their starting rotation. So it seems clear they're going to make a trade. I mean, these guys make a deal today anyway. They're not afraid to do that. They talk a lot about improving on the margins and you know, not necessarily Cole Hamels, although obviously he's the one everybody wants them to get. But I think if they feel they could get an established number 3 to fill in for a number 6 or 7, which is what they really have in the rotation, and they feel that's an improvement. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do that, because if it takes to get a Cole Hamels, your best prospect, I don't see the Dodgers trading Julio Urias or Corey Seager or Cole Hamels or anybody. I just don't see it happening. So, you know, it would take kind of, you know, amazing blockbuster Yasiel Puig-like type deal to get a Cole Hamels or a number 1 starter to go with this team. And because I can't imagine another general manager trading a top-notch pitcher for just another prospect. So, you know, unless there's some amazing deal out there, you know, that we haven't thought about or speculated. I see them getting a number three, a number two, a number four, whatever they feel would be an improvement on what they already have. But I also don't see them sitting still and idly by when they they're really down to their sixth and seventh starter in their on their depth chart.
Yeah, I think the number three and four starters are going to be a hot commodity come July 31st. That seems to be what a lot of people are looking for. So, all right, Ken, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, Allison, thanks.
I'm here with Chris Haft, who covers the Giants for MLB.com, those pesky Giants that just won't ever go away. Chris, so Matt Duffy is the guy that I guess they didn't really want to give the starting job to when they signed Casey McGee. And now he is possibly gunning for maybe team MVP. So two games in a row, he was one hit short of the cycle, hit safely in like 12 of 13 games. And he's just, you know, I mean, they say he's underrated. That would be a little bit of an understatement at this point. So it's got to be amazing for everybody who's watching him, what's going on.
He's just, you know, he's, I might have mentioned this before. It's a paradox that he's a really smart hitter who doesn't, who's smart enough to know not to get too much inside his own head, you know, when he hits. He keeps his approach very simple. You know, to look at him, you wouldn't even think he's a big league ball player. He's you know, he's really skinny. You know, you just want to give him a sandwich whenever you see him. And but he knows he's physically overmatched by guys, so he compensates with supreme confidence, not cockiness at all, just confidence. He figures, you know, this is what he said to me a few times. You know, you're good, I'm good. Let's see what happens. You know, as far as a pitcher hitter matchup, and but defensively he's playing third base. It's not his natural position, but he's been very adequate over there. Because he works his rear end off, so it's kind of a situation of with him. It's what's not to like.
Yeah, and I mean, when you have Bruce Bochy that likes you, then that's you have to feel pretty good. And he seems to be just extremely pleased with how everything is working out over there.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably playing for the perfect manager. You know, a guy who doesn't judge by, you know, whether you look good in a bathing suit or whatever.
So Humpty Dumpty is putting himself back together again when it comes to the starting rotation. So we have Matt Cain and Jake Peavy coming back at the same time. Is that still the case? What's the schedule for these 2 days?
Yeah, these next 2 days will be perhaps, you know, tomorrow will be very interesting with Matt Cain coming back and Friday with Jake Peavy. You know, this could shape the rest of their season. If those two guys come back strong, well, maybe they don't need to go out and get a pitcher at the trade deadline. If they pitch shakily, well, you know, that changes a whole lot.
So for those of us that aren't watching every single game and hanging out every single inning of the San Francisco Giants, how does the rotation shake out now? Who's out, and what's the 5-man rotation?
I'm sorry, Allison. I'm having trouble hearing here at this the ambient noise here at the.
Oh, sorry. The five.
Yeah,
so with Cain and Peavy in, who's like, how does the what's the 5-man rotation at this point with those two in?
Well, let's see. Tonight, so you have Heston, Cain, Peavy, I believe Bumgarner, and then Hudson. Right now.
Okay.
With Lincecum going on, Lincecum will go on the DL when Cain pitches tomorrow. So, but this could again, it could be a state of flux for the rest of the year.
Well, yeah, but it's those are some pretty good names that you can kind of, even if there's a couple hiccups that go on. I guess that they do have some depth at this point. They've got some guys that have stepped up in the absence of some of these other pitchers, and so I guess they have a couple of fallback options, that's what the minor league system is supposed to produce, right?
Yeah, well, not some, you know, we didn't mention Ryan Vogelsong, you know, he'll pitch again.
Right.
What they might do is they've got days off, scheduled off days almost every week for the remainder of the year. at least one a week. So they could, slide a guy in, slide a guy out, give a guy, skip a guy for two starts, but they're not necessarily all the time. There's lots of creative things they can do and probably will do.
And I wanted to ask you about Jeremy Affeldt. Of course, I was on assignment last week, so I did not do the podcast with you, and so I didn't realize that he was on a disabled list with a left shoulder strain. And, Jeremy Affeldt, those are the guys that I just think are so valuable to teams. And I can't remember the crazy stat from the postseason last year, but it was some ridiculous dominance that he had that, of course, no one was paying attention to because he's a left-handed reliever, so people aren't paying attention to those guys. They're so key. So I'm very worried about my friend Jeremy Affeldt. What's the deal with him, and is this going to be like a short thing, or is this something to be worried about?
I don't think it's maybe in between. I don't think it's been determined yet whether he'll be able to come off after 15 days or we'll need a little extra time. But you're right. He has something like the third lowest postseason ERA ever. Some guy named Babe Ruth is right after him in a number four spot. So it's a pretty impressive list.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to the bullpen guys because I've been saying it for years. I mean, you don't know them, you don't notice them until they're blowing things. But
right.
you can't win a World Series without guys like him. Take them out of the equation and give somebody put somebody in with three-fourths of the ability, and you're not in October.
Yeah, the great thing about Jeremy is he can, when he's on, he can face righties as well as lefties, be just as effective against both of them. So that's why he's, as you pointed out, such a key cog in how the team does.
Yeah. Well, I think this is such an interesting pennant race or division race, more so than, kind of like the AL East is getting pretty interesting too, because everybody, it seemed like nobody really wanted to be in the lead there, and now everyone's within like a half a game of each other. But this Dodgers-Giants thing, it seems like it's going to be them again. Not that it should really surprise any of us. But it's really interesting because they're not like, nobody's like really dominating at any point. So I kind of think it's just because there's just so much equality now, I feel, in the game as far as just parity, that maybe it's not that teams aren't as good, but it's just they're sort of canceling each other out maybe at the right time. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, totally makes sense. And Allison, and the other teams in the West really are respectable.
Yeah.
It's a pretty even matchup just about any given night in this division.
Yeah, I would think that. I mean, even like the Rockies are 10 games under. Okay, so they're not. This is not a good team. But there's always like the one team in the division that it's like whoever beats up on them the most is usually of the good teams usually win the division, but there's really not anybody that you can really kick around in the NL West. So anyway, very interesting.
No, not at all.
No. Okay, thanks so much, Chris. Enjoyed it, and we will talk to you next week.
Oh, thank you, as always.
Here with Corey Brock, who has been covering the Padres for MLB.com for as long as I can remember. And, Corey, let's talk about the new manager, Pat Murphy. So he is a little bit settled in, I guess, to his interim position. It's been maybe a couple weeks, and he seems to be, settling in okay. What have you observed from him in these last several games?
Yeah, I think settling in is a pretty good term. It's 2 weeks on the job today, Tuesday, and he, it's kind of a work in progress. He'll be the first to admit it. It's a steep learning curve for a guy to, essentially parachute into that clubhouse and not entirely be surrounded by strangers, some of these guys he had in AAA. And, of course, Pat was part of the big league staff during spring training. So, he's familiar with a lot of these guys. But to now be in charge, it's an interesting experiment is what I like to call it. And I don't mean that in a disparaging sense. I just mean it in, it's a lesson in learning people mostly. The players are learning about Pat. Pat is learning about the players. So it's going to be kind of an ongoing process between, now and the end of the year, this sort of a feeling out process. Allison, the stuff on the field, the in-game strategy, all that sort of takes care of itself. And certainly Pat has a good staff to rely on, the coaching staff still intact. So he's leaning on those guys a lot. So, but it's mostly managing people and learning about the personnel, and for them trying to figure out what Pat Murphy's all about.
So is this, I mean, this will be an ongoing thing all season, and then they could change managers again, right?
Yeah, that's very conceivable. I think, you know, I wouldn't at all be surprised, you know, that they open this up and, you know, conduct a big search and try and make a big splash in the off season. Now, the Pat can make a strong case for himself, certainly, if the team plays better here in the second half and wins a lot of games. You know, I'm not sure it'll matter one way or the other, but this is, you know, it's a good opportunity for him. You know, I don't think he probably didn't want this job under these circumstances, but, you know, these guys sort of get into this business, most of them do, looking to become major league managers, and now he has that opportunity. You know, I think he's going to try and seize it. We'll see where this sort of goes between now and the end of September, but, you know, I would have to think that if they play well, that he's going to get, at the very least, get another interview, if he even needs one at that point, to or at least have his foot in the door as far as becoming the full-time manager in 2016.
So I've been sort of rolling through some of the news items. It seems that the Padres are getting a little banged up. So can you give us an update on Will Middlebrooks and, I guess, of course, Spangenberg is maybe on the shelf a little bit, and does this open up maybe a promotion for Jed Jerko?
Yeah, Corey Spangenberg got a deep left knee contusion that he got when Arizona Diamondback went in hard at second base trying to break up a double play. A clean play, but, you know, he just kind of landed awkwardly on the leg, and so he's going to go on the disabled list. We get old friend Jed Jerko back from AAA. He went down there a few weeks ago to work on a few things. So he's going to get a chance to play second base again. Will Middlebrooks got dinged up. He got his left leg sort of dinged up the other day, rolled an ankle as he came in trying to get a foul ball over near the visiting dugout. And you've seen it before, Allison, on that on-deck circle. You know, those guys leave all that junk out there.
Right.
The weighted bat, the pine tar rags, the little weighted donut that they could use. So just kind of bad luck there, and nothing you could really do about that. But I think they feel pretty fortunate. This may only be a couple-day thing. So, but at least with this Spangenberg thing, give him a chance to rest that knee, other than this DL stint. And we'll find out more a little bit moving forward. But, you know, I don't think it's going to require more than the 15 days, which, you know, pretty much will lead us right up to the All-Star break.
Do these guys still believe in, I don't know, I mean, of course they believe in themselves, but what's kind of this general overall feeling just, in, you know, within the clubhouse walls? I mean, did they believe that they have enough to make a run and maybe contend in this division? Is the optimism still around the same?
Well, you know, I think, you know, maybe from a confidence standpoint, things kind of took a hit a little bit when they let go of Bud Black. And I'll come back and answer your question directly in a second. But I think, at least from that standpoint, it's been kind of a clubhouse in flux in the sense that, you know, guys are trying to figure things out a little bit. I kind of had a fun analogy in this story I did about Pat Murphy. Padres third base coach Glenn Hoffman was an interim manager of the Dodgers in 1998, sort of the same situation where he was brought up from AAA, and he managed to the end of the year. And he said, you know, there's truly an initial shock with players when something kind of this kind of upheaval happens. And so I think the players are kind of sorting through that and maybe starting to pull out of that now. But in terms of the mood in the clubhouse and the confidence in what they have, I think they've always felt like they had the right guys in there. I guess you could nitpick, and well, I shouldn't say nitpick, but, you know, I think they needed an upgrade at shortstop eventually in a few other areas. But I think, by and large, they feel like the clubhouse personnel, the position players, the pitchers, it's the right guys. It's just not the right guys playing up to their abilities. And I think that's what's really plagued this team and led them to some wild, wild periods of inconsistency this year.
And it's interesting. I write the weekly power rankings roundup for MLB.com, and I was noting this week that this trade deadline could be, like, really, really stressful for a lot of general managers and possibly the most ever because there are so many teams that are on the bubble of, like, they're not very good. They're not that bad. And when you're, like, within six games of the second wild card, like, how could you possibly think you're out of it, even though you're four games under 500? And so there's a lot of teams that are sort of in that. I would see the Padres as sort of that kind of team, too. I mean, they've made so many moves that I can't even imagine that they would dip further into their farm system to make a splash or start selling off some guys. Because, you know, I guess the Padres seem to be the team most likely to stand pat. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I know there's been a few people who have sort of suggested that maybe the Padres should hit the reset button and maybe try and move some of these pieces they have. And I think, you know, I think there's some merits to that, but I just don't think they could do that. One, because, you know, they're not completely out of this thing at this point. Two, I think that really sends a bad message to your fan base. And we have to remember this is an organization that it's going to be hosting the All-Star game next year. They're trying to build some goodwill locally. They're trying to create something here and to, you know, 6 months after the fact, essentially blow this thing up and try and recoup some prospects. Even if it's taking a step back to take a step forward, I just think that's a real bitter pill for the fan base and for the organization to swallow. So, you know, I can't see them doing that. You know, they do have some interesting pieces they could move in deals, but I think they have to tread fairly carefully here. So while they may not be buyers, I'm not sure they'll be sellers either. So, yeah, maybe they will have to stand pat and hope that this roster, the 25 guys in that clubhouse, collectively start playing better.
Yeah, and maybe just, like, keep it together and then decide in the offseason what tweaks you need to make. Like, the trade deadline kind of takes on this, you know, monster image of just, like, we have to do something. And you really don't. I mean, you can, you know, sort of, like, assess. And I think, like you said, I mean, they need to see what kind of group they have. And even though that sounds funny to say that, like, 3 months into the season, but we still don't really know. I mean, with this group, we don't know. Like, we can't really predict, you know, 2 years from now where they might be headed.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's, yeah, they assembled this thing, you know, thinking that this is going to be a group that could, you know, contend this year and beyond this year. Even if you look at Justin Upton, maybe if he's just a one-year player, you end up getting a draft pick for him. A lot of these guys they acquired are under team control beyond 2015. Derek Norris, Matt Kemp, Will Middlebrooks, you know, and then the guys who were already here, Andrew Kashner, Tyson Ross. I mean, I think, you know, there's various ways to sort of build your team, whether that be through the draft and player development, or you could move a bunch of prospects and get better immediately, which is what they did, which is so different that you and I have talked about so often. You know, I'm still not convinced one way is better than the other. One's certainly safer than the other, and that's to hang on to your pieces. But who's to say those guys become anything? So let's say who's to say that if you start selling off some veterans now, not only does it look bad to your fan base, but the prospects you recoup, what if they don't become anything? So at least with these guys in the clubhouse now, Allison, you know they have a track record. And you know that there's no way that all these guys are regressing at the same time. That's just extremely, extremely unlikely. So you have to bank on these guys getting better. And we've seen flashes at times when these guys have been very, very good. But they've been prone to these wild, inconsistent streaks, and it's been maddening. It was maddening for Buddy Black. It's maddening for A.J. Preller, Ron Fowler, the executive chairman, Mike D., the team president. I think they're all frustrated by this. So I think, I don't know. I don't know if you cross your fingers and hope for better play, but I really don't know what else they could do.
Yeah. Well, it continues to be a very interesting story in the NL West, so we'll keep our eyes peeled. Corey, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
You bet. Thanks, Allison.
Here with my friend Steve Gilbert, who is paying closer attention to the Arizona Diamondbacks than anybody else that I know. And Steve, anytime, I mean, people that are in our business, anytime they see the name Dr. James Andrews, sirens go off, flashing red lights, panic all around. I'm not so sure that's the situation now with Archie Bradley. So he just went to Dr. Andrews to get a second opinion on a shoulder that I think everyone's trying to figure out what's wrong with it. Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah, you know, Allison, when he went on the disabled list, he was diagnosed with tendonitis in the shoulder. And he worked on a strengthening program, and exercises and that kind of thing. And then when he went out on a rehab assignment, his first rehab start, he didn't feel so great towards the end of it. You know, he still felt some discomfort in his shoulder. So he was concerned. The team, you know, had him come back, did another MRI, and again, it showed that he just had tendonitis in there. But, you know, for him, it's a kind of pain that he's not used to feeling, and it's a concern for him, and so he wants to get a second opinion, so they're going to send him to Dr. Andrews for that. So we'll see. It's certainly, anything dealing with the shoulder is always more serious than the elbow these days, and the Diamondbacks have bad memories of, you know, Brandon Webb having some shoulder procedures done, and doctors telling him that he should be fine and good to go. And as we know, he never pitched in the big leagues again after that opening day of 2009. So we'll see what happens with Archie, but it's certainly something that he was concerned about and wanted a little peace of mind from.
This has to be a scary time for him. I mean, like you said, it's, you know, you have these shapes of like Brandon Webb and just times when so much time went by that trying to figure it out, and then all of a sudden, you know, there goes the career. Obviously, they're not there with Archie, but it has to be, like, so scary for him to be in this kind of in-between phase.
I'm sure, because he said, you know, it's something that he's never really experienced before. So, again, yeah, that's it's got to be always alarming for a pitcher when they experience certain bits of discomfort, and when there's no real – when they don't really feel like the answer that they're getting is a complete one, I'm sure that adds to their anxiety as well.
Well, on the flip side, there's somebody who did undergo extensive surgery on his elbow, Patrick Corbin. So it looks like he's about to come back after spending so much time out with Tommy John surgery. So where does he slot into Diamondbacks rotation, and when should we be seeing him?
Yeah, we should be seeing him when they go to Texas next week for a two-game series, interleague series. So that's exciting for him. I know he's been chomping at the bit to get back, and they've, you know, done everything they could to take it slow with him and just to make sure that that he is fully healthy and that he doesn't rush him, you know, because there's always that tendency when you start to feel good or you start to come back, you know, you want to push things, you want to rush things, and they've really worked with him to try to get him to not do that and to take their time and make sure that he's absolutely ready to be back.
It's kind of nice to see that he's close to coming back, and Diamondbacks are sort of right somewhere in the middle there. They probably couldn't have, of course they want it to be, everyone wants to have a perfect record, but I would think that the Diamondbacks feel pretty good about where they are at this phase, that they can get some of the injured guys back.
You know, Alfred, I really think so. I mean, I think that, you know, obviously, like you said, that every team would want to be doing better. They want to win all their games. But when you look at this team and where they were last year, you know, they had the worst record in Major League Baseball. And it was just a disaster season for them. And here they are, you know, they're right around the 500 mark. They've had 11 tries at getting back to the 500 mark since April 24th and haven't been able to do it. But nonetheless, they're still right there on the cusp of it. And that's a huge improvement over where they were last year. And certainly a step forward at this point of the season. So I think they have to be somewhat, even if they don't say it, they have to be somewhat happy with the way things have gone thus far.
So that's a good point. Like, how important is 500? Obviously, it's a benchmark. It means that you are, you know, if you're over 500, you've won more games than you've lost. So everyone wants to have that. Given where this team was last year, given the amount of time that they've almost gotten there, is it important? Is that going to be like something significant when they finally get there, or are they kind of like, you know, whatever, because we could be below win one more game? So it's like, how important is the 500 mark to them at this point?
Well, you know, I asked Tony La Russa that the other day, and his comment was, well, we don't want to be a 500 team. We want to be an above 500 team. Of course, to be an above 500 team, you got to eventually get to 500 first. And he used a very, you know, as only Tony can do, does some interesting explanations. He used a two-humped camel as an example. You know, it's not just one hump. It's not just the 500 mark that they have to get over, but to get consistently over the 500 mark is what he would like. Whether or not that happens, I don't know. I think as an organization, if you take a step back and look at where they're at, And where they were last year, I think that this should be a year of progress for them. And certainly if they finish around the 500 mark, it'd be hard to look at it as anything but a year of progress for them.
And I want to ask you about Brad Ziegler. So he seems to be liking the closer role. I was looking at his numbers, and of course you're watching these games, so correct me if I'm wrong, but he seems to be thriving in this role. How's the team feeling about the closer role?
Yeah, you know, he did this last year, too, when they needed him, when J.J. Putz got injured and was not effective and eventually designated for assignment. And when Addison Reed struggled, they turned to Ziegler, and, you know, almost as a last resort. And he pitched well in the role then. And it's almost like that he's a guy that people continually doubt as a closer because he doesn't throw hard. He's got that submarine motion. And, you know, there aren't a lot of closers that throw like that. And I did a story a couple of years ago when he was doing that role when we went through Pittsburgh. I had him sit down with Kent Ecolvi and just listen to the conversation between the two of them as, you know, the outstanding closer for the Pirates in the late 1970s. And so he's a guy that, you know, he's been effective. Whether you think he does it in the way that most closers should or whatnot, he's been great in that role for them. So I think until further notice, he's the guy that's going to get the ball when there's a save situation.
Good for him. Okay, well, Steve, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Allison, it's always my pleasure.
Here for the greatest 9 minutes of my week every week with Thomas Harding, my good friend, who covers the Rockies. And Thomas, I don't even know where to start because there's some, like, very interesting news that is kind of coming out of Rockies camp. First of all, is John Axford, is everything okay? He's on the inactive list. He went home for a family matter. We all know what's been going on with his son. Is everything okay there?
Okay, well, we are told by manager Walt Weiss that his son is okay. It's just more of a family matter. Obviously, you know, when someone has to leave the club during the season, you know, it's not a small matter, but the fact is the Rockies are working with Axford and his family through this difficult time. I know the family just witnessing the kid being bitten by a rattlesnake. They've got two children. I mean, it's a hard time. We have to think of these players as people. And I certainly would never begrudge him that time off with his family. So, and the Rockies feel the same way. There's a lot of respect for John Axford around here, and not only what he's gone through, but just the professional he is. So everybody's hoping that all works out well with him and his family, and he can be back pitching.
Yeah, it's just so scary when any time you hear something with John and with Family Matters, it just brings us back to that, you know, really awful accident at spring training. So, yes, we'll continue to hope that everything works out for them. In the meantime, LaTroy Hawkins, our good friend, he is stepped in to be closer again. He seems to be doing pretty well. And he's been pitching well after his DL stint. It kind of came out that he was, not pitching 100%, but he's put up some pretty good numbers since he's come back.
Yes, he has. He was able to let that biceps tendon heal to the point that he could pitch. And last night when he came in the ninth inning, he was throwing at 94, 95 miles an hour. The issue with LaTroy now is, you know, at 42 years old and with a biceps tendon that, let's face it, it still hurts. I mean, there's no way that you can have that injury that lasted from spring training into April and come back and really keep up the schedule of throwing a baseball 94, 95 miles an hour. So you're not going to see him out there closing every day. For example, there's a quick turnaround. It went from a 7:05 Pacific time game last night to 12:35 today. Chances of him closing a game today are nil. They would have to go with a younger guy like a Scott Oberg or Tommy Kahnle in the ninth inning today. And that is the issue with Hawkins right now. He threw, I think it was two games out of three in Denver and also warmed up in another one. But he wasn't available for the first two games of San Francisco. So you do have to work around the age and the pain there. But when you get LaTroy Hawkins, you get a pretty darn good arm.
Yeah, and he's got such a great attitude. He's just kind of like, whatever I need to do to help the team, I'll do it. I mean, he's just, it's kind of unfortunate, not kind of, it's very unfortunate that he is retiring at the end of the season because he's like the kind of guy you want in Major League Baseball. He's a great teammate, he's a great person, and he just knows how to teach other people how to be professional.
That's right. That's why I believe that he does have a future in this game. And I know during the winter he talked about going into front office work. He wanted to learn some of the sabermetrics, some of the stats, and apply those to the experience that he had. Now, I expect with a lot of guys who've had long careers that he's going to want to spend some time with the family. So I don't really expect him in baseball next season, but I do expect him back at some point, whether it's in a front office role or even a coaching role. You know, he's worked with the MLB International Academy, he's going to Brazil and working with some of their young athletes the past couple of off seasons with Barry Larkin. So there is I doubt that he's going to be in baseball full-time next season, but even if he is taking family time, you expect him to be a force in the game. People will probably call him and ask him questions about players. Maybe there will be players who will call and ask for advice.
Yeah, I think someday we're going to see him as a manager, but it'll be a long time down the road. A lot of guys talk about, I can't wait to retire because I want to spend time with my family. And their definition of spending time kind of varies from person to person. But LaTroy, he's a 100% devoted father, so I'm sure he's going to want to probably do that for a little while.
Yes, he's got a daughter who is very athletic. I've seen her around, and I could imagine many different teams and sports that she could be involved with. I know she's been involved with basketball. She's been involved with softball, has wanted to do baseball, and there's no doubt in my mind she could do those things. And LaTroy deserves the opportunity to see that happen. And, yeah, a lot of guys, let's face it, this game, when it grabs you, it doesn't let go. So even when they go home to spend time with the family, the itch to get involved with baseball will take over at some point. We don't know when, but when it happens, he'll be welcome back in the game.
Absolutely. And I wanted to ask you about Tyler Mesta, because this is so interesting. So they sent him home after he's had, like, all these control issues. So he got sent down to the minor leagues. I didn't realize that he was a short season Class A. So, and he just still seems to be having some issues, major control issues. So they sent him home to just kind of, like, I guess, just take a complete break from all of this. What's going on with him?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, if I could answer or you could answer or anybody could answer what's going on with Tyler Matzik, then we'd be rich right now. This is a guy who was a number one draft pick at one point. Last year he pitched a complete game shutout against the Diamondbacks at Coors Field, and he certainly looked like a guy you can build a future around, but then the control went early in the year. He actually was getting through innings of games, but what I saw was this was a guy who was getting through on toughness, but he lost his way fundamentally. He lost his way with his mechanics and was just kind of fighting through it. And at some point, you've got to get that back under control. Now I think they've worked so much with him on those things that he's almost going out of the games thinking right now. So this is another tack to do. They sent him down to AAA, and that's when things went crazy. I mean, he had one inning where he walked seven guys, so they pulled him out of competition and said, hey, we just got to rebuild you. So they used the extended spring training program trying to rebuild him, and that's what they were doing. They sent him to short season A to pitch a few games, and it really didn't work out, so they're going to give him some time off. You know, I think about Roy Halladay at an early point in his career where he struggled, and he was a major leaguer, and he went all the way down to the Class A level and was able to work on his changeup and work on the things that went awry, and then he came back and was a great major league pitcher. Right now, Tyler Matzik has to feel a long way from that, but it has happened before, and guys have come out on the other side.
Hard to differentiate or to kind of balance, I guess, like making sure the guy is, like, in a proper mental state and then making sure that he's physically, like, keeping up with what he needs to be doing to get to the big league. So they have sports psychologists. I mean, this is all things that, you know, we usually don't really write about and talk about a whole lot because it's really none of our business. But I would imagine that they're concerned with just where he is from, like, a mental standpoint to be able to, stay strong enough to get through this.
And this happened early in his career where he actually asked for a break and went home for a bit, then came back and worked his way up to the major league. So if you're a Colorado Rockies fan or just concerned about him as a human being, you certainly hope that this all works out to where when he does get his shot, he's pitching at his best, and he's giving himself a chance. Right now, he's not really giving himself a chance because of the control issues.
Okay. Well, we will continue to root for young Mr. Mesick. And enjoy the game. I hear the pregame bells and whistles that are sounding. So, Thomas, thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, thanks for having me. These were wonderful 9 minutes.
Thank you for listening to MLB.com Extras, the NL West.